That sounds good. Thanks, Jonathan.
All right, you're live.
Okay, I'm going to wait till my clock turns to 6 o'clock. We're almost there. Okay, it is 6 o'clock. I'm going to open the Hood River City Council meeting for September 14th, 2020. And before we get started, I have a couple things that I wanted to say. First of all, I wanted to thank the firefighters and the first responders and all the law enforcement that has been involved. And additionally, very recently, the National Guard, who have been involved in helping fight the wildfires that we've been having here in Oregon. So thank you for everything you've been doing in the last week and are continuing to do and probably will be for some time now. And then secondly, I'd like to have a moment of silence to remember those that have been lost in the fires in the last week in Oregon. Okay, we'll go ahead and recess our Hood River City Council meeting in order to open the Urban Renewal Agency meeting. So we'll call to order at 6:01 the Hood River Urban Renewal Agency. Do we have any agenda additions or corrections, Will?
We do not.
Okay, great. We have some minutes from June 8th and June 22nd. Does anyone have anything on those that they had any changes on? Comments? I don't see any hands going up on those. Could we get a motion to approve those?
I'd move we approve the minutes of June 8th and June 22nd, 2020.
Second.
Megan has moved and Jessica has seconded the approval of minutes from June 8th and June 22nd. Roll call vote to approve those. Jessica?
Aye.
Mark?
Yes.
Dave?
Aye.
Eric?
Aye.
Gladys?
Aye.
Megan?
Yes.
And chair votes aye. Okay. Oh my God, I'm trying to go through all my pictures on here. Sorry, Tim. Sorry.
So okay. Much. Tim? I was going to speak up.
Okay, unanimous. Thank you for speaking up. Occasionally when people speak, then the heads jump around on my screen. So it's a bit confusing. There isn't any business from the audience. Jen said that we did not have anyone that signed up for Urban Renewal or for the City Council meeting to speak from the audience. So we'll go straight to our regular business item, which is the MIG contract award. So Will, you want to take that?
Thanks. Yeah, I'm going to start off with just a little bit of introduction, but we have Alex and Nathan, who are both project managers from MIG. In the attendee space, so we're going to get them promoted up, and then they're going to have the walk through the PowerPoint that was in your packet. But just as some background, this is for the Heights Urban Design and Engineering Project. The Heights plan was adopted in 2011, has a series of projects that all added up to create its maximum indebtedness of $8.5 million for projects. So. Most of the projects in there were utility related, undergrounding of electricity poles, as well as some improvements to sanitary sewer and stormwater line, and then some kind of beautification work as well, but that was really the minority of the expenditures. So that district was established, and then really focus went to Columbia Cascade District for several years while the Heights built up some momentum in its revenue streams. And while Columbia Cascade had its State Street project get done, we switched focus around 2016 when we went to prioritize the projects that were in the original urban renewal plan at a series of community meetings. At those community meetings, we also had open-ended options for people to say, what projects did we miss maybe in 2011 that you want to see? And there was kind of overwhelming write-up for really doing some large-scale traffic, ped, bike improvements all the way up into something like a roundabout or changing the lanes of traffic, which was out of scope and not budgeted. Follow on to that was some grassroots projects, Streets Alive and Walk Shop hosted by Dan Burden came to town and did some, those were community-led visioning that also heavily focused on sort of large-scale changes to the district. The Urban Renewal Agency kind of took that direction, decided to roll this up with into a project to really evaluate how that would fit in to the scope and to vet these questions through a standard community process rather than it being sort of ad hoc grassroots driven to get the official sort of public process to include or exclude more ambitious changes to the district. So we originally bid this out as a quality-based selection contract, and MIG was the second rated consultant, but within just a couple points of the first rated consultant. We went with the first rated consultant and got through some initial steps, but then we're not satisfied with the work, and so we chose to exercise a no-cause contract termination. And at that point, we brought the question back to the Urban Renewal Committee and to the board. Do we want to continue along this path? What got labeled as the go big option, continue to look at big changes in the district, or do we want to settle in and just do the small incremental changes that were in the already existed in the 2011 plan, you know, mostly undergrounding of the utilities and some smaller scale improvements. The Urban Renewal Agency Committee recommended that they wanted to do the big look. And then that was then approved by council that that is what we wanted to do. So at that point, I started contract negotiations with MIG. And what we came up with was really because of the regulatory hurdles we're facing, the sort of really fractured, I think, opinions about what should happen in the Heights, that we really found that the original budget was just inappropriate for the level of work that is needed to come to a community consensus on something as large scale as the changes would be to adjust right-of-way flow. So some of the key differences between this contract and the contract that we had with the original consultant is one, many more check-ins between the consultant and the URA. So they're going to include 15-minute Zoom check-ins at every Urban Renewal Advisory Committee meeting. The project got kind of needed to have two plans all at once, one under normal conditions when we get back to normal conditions, but kind of a cross-reference as to how all the outreach will be modified to be COVID-19 safe. And then also Nextdoor is included in the MIG project team as a sub-consultant. So they're on the team, same as DKS and all the other sub-consultants, Klein and Associates, versus Nextdoor was more of an add-on when we were with the first consultant, where their contract was directly with us, not part of the project budget. And they kind of just got ad hoc assignments for translation services and things like that. In this contract, they're really integrated into the fold. So that good outreach is sort of in the core of the project. There's also a transportation system plan amendment. And that was put in there because DKS is one of their sub-consultants who's already working on a transportation system plan amendment for the west side work. And so that was sort of an opportunity driven piece of this that if we're using DKS, they have our traffic model, they know our TSP, and it would be cost effective to get that in there as part of the whole adoption process. And then if we wanted to, as we could build that into SDCs once any project that might come out of this is included in the TSP. There includes a demonstration project. If that is if it proves itself to be useful to testing out ideas, there's hours included for a demonstration project. There's RFP support for getting the first project that's identified moving. And that was really a key piece that we wanted to hone in on, is this has been a really long process, and that's because it's attempting to be very comprehensive, but it does mean that we have had intermittent touch points with the public. And I think there's some loss of momentum and sort of wondering where things are and why aren't things changing up there. We wanted to make sure that the dominoes were all laid out to get something done quickly. So we had in there, this isn't just going to be done with a report that gets approved. Then there's also money in this project to have RFP support to get that first project written up as a solicitation and on the street, so we go quickly into implementation. And then also the contract is organized in phases instead of just one project. So as we move through the phase 1, 2, and 3 that are outlined in the scope, and then I'm sure Nathan is gonna go through with you in the presentation, there's check-in points with where we get deliverables with standalone value to the Urban Renewal Agency. And that's a point to accept the work product, evaluate its work quality, and then deliberately decide to move on to the next phase. So with that, I'll pass it over to Nathan and Alex to walk you through a presentation, and then we'll open it up for questions to either Nathan and Alex or to me.
You're on mute, Nathan.
All right. Now hopefully everyone can hear me and see the screen. My name is Nathan Polansky. I'm a civil engineer with MIG and our team's project manager. Also with me this evening is Alex Dupi, MIG's Director of Planning Services. So what we wanted to do is just kind of do a quick overview of our scope and the kind of, like Will mentioned, the kind of the phasing and the kind of the approach that is going to be used to get to the development of this kind of corridor plan. The scope of the project is to develop a comprehensive plan for improving 12th and 13th streets and the intersections and streets that tie the state highway couplet together at the north and south ends of the Heights District. The project will address improvements documented both in that kind of early, I want to say it was 2011, Heights District Urban Renewal Plan, and the community conversations that Will just mentioned that have kind of been taking place over the last kind of 3 or more years, kind of within the community related to kind of traffic safety, community identity, and kind of documenting, you know, what is really the vision and goal for these corridors to support both regional and local needs. Here's a map of the study area. We'll be focused on the public right-of-way along key study streets being 12th and 13th Street, and then also May and Belmont Avenue, where the highway couplet comes back together at the north and south ends of the corridor. So primarily focusing on the public right-of-way, we do anticipate that the kind of public alley between 12th and 13th may be part of the community discussion as we look at kind of mobility options through the project area. So we're looking at a 3 distinct phases for this process with public engagement happening throughout the project process. Phase 1, our team working with the community and city will establish the project vision and project foundation. We'll be reviewing and cataloging the existing conditions and corridor context, kind of understanding and coordinating with business owners in the local community to understand existing opportunities and constraints that exist along the corridor, documenting city and ODOT design standards that will guide and make sure concepts that are being developed are in alignment with required standards, and then also developing a base map survey of the study streets. And this is another piece that is kind of a has been broadened from the original contract. And so we're actually going to be, Klein and Associates will be doing a survey of the project area so to make sure we understand where driveways and curb lines and sidewalks exist today. All of that will feed into phase two, concept development. And phase two will confirm community goals and develop an evaluation approach to evaluate the preliminary concepts. Our team will be developing in coordination with kind of the community three concepts, which will include alternatives for the intersections at the north and south ends of the state highway couplet. We'll be coordinating with ODOT during this design process to confirm the improvements meet their needs. And at the end of phase two, we'll be evaluating and identifying a preferred concept plan for the study area or study corridors. And then phase two, we'll be developing and documenting the preferred concept. This will include an implementation and phasing plan. Planning level cost estimates, and a final concept report that kind of documents the process that we've gone through. We really see this being something that will allow the city and the Urban Renewal Agency to kind of hit the ground running with future projects and apply for grants for future projects. We'll mention we'll be doing a markup of the transportation system plan to facilitate a future update to that document. And the end of each phase, our team will be providing a summary memo to document kind of the work, findings, and kind of direction for the next phase and kind of getting approval at each step of the way. Task seven, if needed, we'll be doing, we'll mention kind of a demonstration project, and this is something that, you know, our team can provide the City and Urban Renewal Agency design support to identify and develop a project that kind of can help based on community conversations, advance the goals of the project depending on concepts that are explored. So I really see that potentially as happening kind of between phases in two and three, depending on what's needed. This graphic is included in your meeting packet and shows the project tasks and how they align with each phase of the project. I'm not gonna go into this in detail, nor do I expect that you could read it. But in general, it's something that we work through with Will to kind of document kind of phase by phase what the key objectives are, key deliverables, and those peak kind of public engagement tasks that are happening in each phase of the project. I think it's important to kind of, this project has a much more robust public engagement process than I think what had previously been envisioned. And so with that, I'll have Alex talk a little bit about our public engagement approach.
Great. Thanks, Nathan. So I'm just going to step through a few kind of examples of what we anticipate doing throughout this project. You know, with the, you know, kind of the backdrop of COVID-19, you know, certainly this has changed how we do approach public engagement, but that it also has been clear to us, you know, from doing this for the past several months, that projects don't stop, you know, regardless of what's happening out there. We need to be able to adapt and to be able to provide you know, an opportunity for people to be a part of a project in a variety of different methods. So in many ways, some of the things we've been doing for several years have actually been honed through COVID-19, particularly online engagement, but also how we think about specific audiences for this project. We have public engagement within each phase of the project. As Nathan mentioned, there are you know, kind of specific tasks with each phase, whether it's discovery through concept and into refinement. Public engagement is tied to each of those specific kind of types of tasks and the type of input that we're looking for. A key partner with this is the Nextdoor. We've already been talking with them about how to engage Latino businesses and community members as a part of this process. To make sure that, you know, one, it's open and accessible, but also when we think about collateral material, whether it's fact sheets, online engagement, in-person activities, that we're both kind of cognizant of the needs of each specific community, but also are able to provide information for each group and individual to be able to make an informed decision through the process. We are proposing throughout the process, primarily online in the beginning, but also doing in-person engagement as we're able to, as COVID hopefully lessens in 2021. We're looking at family-friendly events. We want to make sure that everybody feels comfortable and welcomed into the environment that this project will have. But we're also looking at specific business outreach as well, too. We know that there's strong business interest within the corridor. For these types of projects, there's often fear of change with streetscape improvements and how it'll affect businesses. So that's starting very early in this process to reach out to specific businesses throughout the corridor to make sure that, one, they have information for the project, but also, two, that they understand who to get a hold of when they have questions and how to be involved. And so that's a partnership with Nextdoor. We have a number of meetings. Some of them are really brief. We'll just be quick updates to you and the board members to make sure that you know what's going on so that you're informed and your constituency is informed. We will be doing, as we get deeper into the process, more focused engagement as we're starting to think about opportunities and constraints, existing conditions. That's very high level. When we actually get into the concepts, then we're going to be asking for specific recommendations from the community. But really, this is a sense or a plan kind of designed to address kind of currently where we're at with COVID, but also knowing that that's eventually going to change and getting it back into the in-person events. Next slide, Nathan. So I'll just talk briefly about the phases. Our kickoff workshop, we initially had thought it would be in person. We have modified that to be an online kickoff, and I'm going to show you an example of what we've been doing with that. We're also tying that to a specific type of survey that allows people to actually place pins within the corridor to tell us exactly what works and what's not working. But I think also importantly with that survey, we'll be able to ask people about directions and flow, how they travel through the corridor with different ways and different times. So we can get a good sense of where people are coming from and how they experience the corridor, but that also asking them about opportunities for how they'd like to see the corridor change. And one kind of observation with COVID is that people are stuck in front of their computers or on their screen, on their laptops or phones, much more so than before. And so we've actually seen much higher rates of responses with online surveys now. We've also seen different responses at times for open houses. We just did an open house for the city of Wilsonville for their pedestrian bridge project. And we had a higher response rate at lunchtime than we did in the evening. And that's primarily because people are already on their computer. And so making sure that we can time these events, actually we can host them more than once because it's a little easier to put on. Those are things we've been thinking about for COVID to make sure that the process can move forward, effectively and, within schedule, but acknowledging that there's, some things we need to think about as we move forward. We do have a number of things, both collateral material as well as websites. But all of those specific elements will be documented within the public engagement plan that will set the strategy for moving forward. So with this, Nathan, I believe I turn it back over to you.
Yeah, so we'll be going through first phase. We'll kind of be going through a document review, looking at both city and ODOT specific documents to provide design guidance. Alex mentioned the kind of public engagement process and kind of using those Zoom meetings. This is just kind of a screenshot of the Wilsonville project and kind of some of the the way things were set up, showing stakeholder meetings, how we're able to hold those kind of in an online environment and get feedback.
And Nathan, with this one as well, we at MIG, we used to do what's called wall graphicing, where we'd have 4 by 15 foot pieces of paper where we draw on ideas, make sure everybody's ideas were down. And it was a great way for people to view to make sure that their voice is being heard. We transitioned that into a virtual wall graphic. This is one we did for the city of Wilsonville, where as the conversation is being facilitated, the presentation is happening or polling. We did a lot of polling with this project as well too, that another person is actually doing that virtual wall graphic as the meeting occurs. So a lot of the capabilities that we've had for traditional in-person meetings have been moved right into the virtual platform. And so this is something that they'll be able to put on their website that, you know, documents that entire process.
And here's a kind of example, kind of a screenshot from an online survey. We're able to ask community members and people that are taking the survey for to provide specific place-based feedback. So they're able to put a pin on the dot. We kind of pre-prompt questions based on the type of pin that they drop. And the outcome is a lot of great kind of place-based feedback that is tied specifically to kind of whether it be community goals, mobility goals, traffic concerns. Like Alex mentioned, we're able to, we found great turnout on these. And we've been kind of, these are, this online survey is something that MIG has done for years. So it's not something that we've started doing with COVID.
Yeah, I think this one in particular, I think for this corridor, you know, we've heard a lot of discussion about, you know, bicycle access east and west. You know, how people get up and down the corridor. That's part of this is, and why I think it's important to consider doing this now is that we can start to ask some of these questions to get that solid base of information for when we develop concepts. And again, we're getting really good responses, primarily because people are, you know, confined to their homes or workspaces and are in front of a commute already. It's much easier to do that in person. And these are also compatible with iPhones or, you know, mobile service, so you can click it up on your phone as well when you're out and about.
So coming out of phase one, we'll establish that kind of project foundation and context. Phase two, public engagement, you know, we'll continue the urban renewal coordination meetings, continue engaging with those key business stakeholders. We'll also have our second community event, which will be an open house to present preliminary design concepts and evaluation criteria. But the main work element of phase two is developing and evaluating preliminary concepts. Concepts will consist of three alternatives for managing traffic while balancing community goals. This will include this analysis will include a traffic evaluation of each concept, coordination with ODOT. So based on those phase one outcomes, we'll confirm and document community goals and develop an evaluation approach. This is kind of the back of house, I guess, kind of matrix that we used to kind of, we've used on a kind of past project and just showing as an example to kind of show how we kind of track things and evaluate and kind of making sure that we're looking at things really broadly from access, safety, traffic, streetscape environment, environmental considerations such as green stormwater runoff, and also community identities. So kind of tracking all of those. We'll be developing concepts. For the concepts themselves, we'll have typical streetcar cross sections, plan view kind of layouts for each concept. From a scoping perspective, we've assumed that these three concepts will look at no traffic changes, two-way traffic, and reduced lanes. And the concepts will also document design considerations for improving and upgrading existing utility infrastructure, which was a kind of main component of the 2011 Heights Urban Renewal Plan. We'll also be looking at intersection designs and alternatives for the concepts and kind of how the state highway couplet joins on each end. And again, coordinating with ODOT. And this is just an example for a different project, kind of how we looked at intersection analysis and kind of summarizing some things for public meetings and kind of stakeholder digestion. And here are a couple more examples, you know, really trying to take that kind of more complex matrix and how can we simplify that evaluation analysis of concepts to show the public and key stakeholders to inform and guide getting to a preferred concept. So task, the end of phase three, or the end of phase two, we will be confirming the preferred concept. And phase three is really about developing that final concept and action plan for the Heights District study streets. The concept plan will include typical street cross sections and plans, the intersection concepts based on the analysis and kind of community feedback, and utility infrastructure considerations. The final action plan will include kind of an implementation plan that looks at cost efficiencies from a phasing in kind of standpoint, trying to reduce impacts to businesses and traffic, We'll be providing planning level cost estimates and identifying potential funding strategies to support the city as they pursue future projects. And then, as kind of mentioned previously, we've got the transportation system plan markup and that RFP for the first initial project that would be coming out of this process. Here are kind of a few kind of examples of kind of, you know, what the deliverables could look like for this project based on some of our kind of past work. And so here you kind of see a plan and sections highlighting some of the proposed improvements and streetscape opportunities. We anticipate developing kind of a typical streetscape detail that shows the character of the street based on those conversations with the community. We'll also be talking with city staff, operations and maintenance staff from Public Works, ODOT, making sure that kind of detail, level of detail is reflected. And then I think the most important part of this project is really having an implementable action plan coming out of this for the city to really identify the types of streets, this type of corridor improvements that can happen along the streets. This is an example graphic that kind of summarizes the kind of dozen or so projects from another corridor project that we worked on and kind of explains the rationale, the type of project, the cost, how that project aligns with the guiding principles, and kind of the phasing considerations for that. Our scope also includes preparing some visualizations. We see these being helpful both during the design process to communicate with the community, and also as a tool for the city as they're kind of pursuing future grants to really show that they've done their work to kind of prepare the kind of grant ready project. So that's kind of a quick summary of our scope. And so with that, I will kind of turn it back to Will for any questions.
So I'm sure there's going to be some questions. Mm-hmm. So let's just, do you want to wrap things up, Will, then, or should we just go straight to counselors' questions, or?
Sure, yeah, sorry, I was on mute. I had a couple wrap-up comments. So what we're looking for tonight is is authorizing phase one, not all three phases. Like we said, that will be, subsequent phases will be approved upon adequate acceptance of prior phases. So it'd be phase one plus the contingency is what we're looking at tonight. With that, I think Nathan and Alex and I are ready to answer any questions.
Okay, just so we can visualize maybe phase one, time frame for phase one, do you have any? I know it's a bit hard to do with COVID and everything else going on, but how long, how many months, weeks might that, you envision that taking?
Yeah, in general, we kind of envisioned it kind of being about a 12-month process. That was kind of the timeline pre-COVID. From a overall scale, you know, we kind of see phase one probably being kind of 3 to 4 months. Phase two was 4 to 5 months, and phase three months. So kind of there's a little bit of, you know, phase one is kind of doing some coordination with the community, getting that survey, doing our homework, understanding what the community's needs are, and then the phase two is the kind of expected to be the kind of longest duration, and that's a little heavier on the project consultant team, but we'll still be doing coordination with the community and stakeholders.
Okay, thanks.
One general comment on timeline as well, just for, because I think it kind of is related to that question, is I think in one of the prior iterations of the scope, there actually was a timeline. And I asked Nathan to take that out because I've noticed through this project, through the police facility project as well, these things are very fluid, particularly when it comes into wanting to get all the public engagement that I've heard and seen we want to get. And the level of analysis that we want to go into, and open up different sort of side streets here and there. So having room for that was something that was prioritized in the budget. Having contingency was something that's prioritized in the budget, because and not trying to adhere to sort of a predefined set of timeline, but instead let the timeline be dictated by maybe places where things are moving smoothly, we go quicker, but restriction or something that needs some more time and attention, you know, don't get spun around the axle on keeping a timeline when it's really much more, I think, fluid in this case for this type of design project.
I would also maybe add that the original duration that I kind of mentioned doesn't take into consideration kind of any stops between phases. And so kind of getting back to Will's comment about the fluidity of it, and kind of if there's a moment or a pause point for something that's happening in the community or elsewhere, that can be worked into that schedule.
Great, thank you. Who wants to go next? Questions? Dave?
If I could, Kate, yes. Can you give me an idea of what you envision in terms of potential demonstration project and what your role would be in that? I know you have to pick it from the projects that are developed as part of this, but what sort of thing would that look like?
Yeah, so we kind of envision this to be, you know, potentially similar to the Streets Alive demonstration that took place in 2018. And really, for the purposes of this project, it's we're going to be developing some concepts. And if there is some community or stakeholder concern regarding a concept that, you know, potentially is moving forward as a preferred concept, rather than just charging forward with that, it's let's stop and make sure that that's something that is realistic and palatable from a community perspective. And so for our scope, it includes basically design and permitting support. I want to say it was like up to 80 hours to kind of support the city and urban renewal agency, kind of identify a project that can help move the project along and kind of towards that kind of ultimate goal. So kind of keeping things moving forward. Is that?
Yeah, to give a tangible, for instance, and let me know, Nathan, if this is in scope, is, you know, there could be something that creates bump outs or basically changes sort of the spacing for right away. And I know a lot of people have expressed concern about, you know, could a fire engine get through, can a ambulance get through? And this would be a way for us to put out candlesticks, mimic the physical structure that is in the concept drawings. And show that, you know, this is perfectly safe and it works for the flow of traffic.
Other questions? Jessica?
Where are we on the 12th? Well, I guess just in general, I really appreciated the presentation from MIG, and it's exciting. I think it is a really big project, but it's also going to be really important for the community overall. So I understand why it's so big. I had a question. This is more for Will and Rachel. Where are we on talking with ODOT about acquiring 12th and 13th? And how would that maybe change the scope?
I think either of us take a crack at that.
Go ahead.
Start and you fill in the gaps? Okay. Well, I think what we found out that it's feasible and it's possible, and what the sort of concerns are that we're going to need to look at for the Heights for taking over responsibility for that end. We sort of know that it's possible now, where I think it was seen as kind of a pipe dream before. So, but we do need to make sure that, you know, versus in the downtown area where we know the state of all of the underground utilities, we had a much better idea of that than up in the Heights. We need to see what we're buying if we do the jurisdictional transfer in the Heights, and especially around the payment of the ADA improvements. but I think it is a huge opportunity, particularly if they are already budgeting a certain amount of millions of dollars to upgrade all of the sidewalks. Well, that's going to be way cheaper and go much further if it's piggybacked onto our entire project of not just doing the corners, but doing the entire lengths of the block. So I think this could be a source of funding and a way to make a way to get some efficiencies up there as well. So I think we're definitely going to be looking at that concurrently throughout the entire project, what a jurisdictional transfer looks like up there.
Yeah, and that would definitely have, you know, like, you know, City of Portland's been working on that with Farber, E2nd Avenue, and others. It certainly changes kind of the metrics in terms of what street design allowances are. What's desired to be a walkable area, that's certainly something to consider here. It is also, well, what you get to where, how much maintenance are you taking over with ODOT having not maintained it for years? And so that's also part of the metric that goes into that number.
So the work, just to piggyback on that, so the work that Klein would be contracted to do, surveying, you know, all the public assets up there, or failing, whatever they are, would that be concurrent with what we would be trying to find out for a jurisdictional transfer, so that we don't do that twice to assess that? I guess just, I don't know if that's a question for Will or who.
It wasn't specifically thought of as a purpose of the survey work that's done in here. And I know we have as an optional as needed underground survey is in here as an optional task. You know, Nathan and Alex, I don't know if we need to bring Klein to really answer that as far as what value it would maybe, what double value it might provide to assessing conditions up there.
I don't know the kind of what's required from an ODOT perspective, but it's not for this project. What's included in the base scope is a survey base map. So everything horizontally located. So in plan view, we kind of know where sidewalks are. We know where curbs are, driveways, trees, utilities that are on the surface. There is an additional scope item to do the underground utilities, but I don't think it includes all of the topographic information, so kind of elevation information. And so depending on what's required from ODOT for this other process, that would be something to engage Klein with.
And I don't know if it's a requirement of ODOT. I mean, I think ODOT would just say, here, take it.
Gotcha.
Yeah. I think it's more us saying, what are we taking? And us trying to find out what we're taking prior to doing that.
Yeah.
And so I think it's more the city's due diligence.
Okay. Yeah, and part of that, the other thing that comes to mind is kind of a pavement condition analysis or something like that to understand, you know, what is that pavement quality, and, you know, is something going to fail and need to be repaved and in a near term or a midterm timeline? And that wouldn't be part of this.
Others with questions? Megan?
I mean, I think the most of the scope seems really good. I guess maybe the foundational base of it, of the board and the advisory committee and the community actually figuring out our goals for the Heights, seems like one 2-hour meeting isn't gonna get there. The scope talks about, you know, taking stuff that's already been done. And as I was thinking this through, I'm realizing, like, I don't think we've done a very good job of getting our vision and goals figured out as a group. And so I'm wondering how we maybe, even if it's just like, how do we internally in the board coalesce a goal that we can give direction to the advisory committee to, or how do we make sure we have kind of the right sideboards that we're all looking in the same direction because I think we keep getting distracted by, you know, an individual concept of, oh, we want to change the street lanes or we want to do this, but we haven't said, and actually I think Nathan or Alex did say a little bit in there of like, oh, we want it to be about, you know, safety and all forms of transportation, and we want it to be about community identity and what that identity is. And so I'm wondering how we work with that, either, you know, with whether it's with the consultants or if it's something internal we do as the board, like we did, you know, with the parks plan, where we as a council kind of figured out what we wanted to do and then sent people to the subcommittee to hopefully get it done.
Well, I think it's a combination of both. I think there's, you know, when we think about, like, when we approach these types of projects, you know, the goal, the kind of vision and goals is often not it's not a 1-2 hour meeting. What that 2 hour meeting usually is a way to start to synthesize what the community is saying and then provide your own additional input into that. And then that becomes an outcome of that meeting for what goals and objectives or vision and goals might look like. So how I would imagine this to start to flush out is, you know, initially we have a series of stakeholder meetings with either businesses, community groups. Those groups are usually pretty good at telling you what's wrong or what's working well. And so those are some things that we can start to gather as a part of that. And then through the survey process, in addition to asking questions about, you know, dangerous or great locations within the corridor, you can start to ask questions about, you know, if you could, in three words, give me three words that define this corridor, or, you know, give me your vision. And then we can start to synthesize those elements. And then we come back to you with, you know, some concepts and ideas to vet and provide additional input. And so that's how that first phase of the process starts to move forward, is that we're not coming to you and with a blank slate saying, all right, we got to figure out the vision and goals. It's more about, we have this input that we've, you know, developed with the community. Let's vet that and refine it. Then let's take it back out. And then that's how that starts to kind of inform the process. And so that first phase is really, you know, that synthesis over a series of different types of events and activities.
Thanks, Alex. I guess maybe I'm confused, but does the kickoff meeting happen then after the stakeholder meetings and the community survey?
So the stakeholder meetings would happen first. So from a phase one standpoint, and I hate to say this, but we're already getting into the holidays. We're coming close to the holidays. From a phase one standpoint, I imagine us doing stakeholder meetings as soon as we can, probably in October, whether those are outside in person or via Zoom. We've done them both ways recently. That would be our first setup. And then we would continue to do baseline information, you know, stuff kind of project specific, and then probably line out a survey in early January with the open house. A piece of, basically, once you get between Thanksgiving and Christmas, that's kind of no man's land in terms of public engagement, particularly if you're dealing with, you know, that's a very important time of the year for Latino communities as well. And so we want to make sure that everybody wants to be part of that. So moving that to January actually starts to make sense, but doing those early stakeholder meetings in October prior to get some information, I think is reasonable. We have a fair bit of baseline work to do anyways to get ready for the survey. And so having actually a few months before then is actually good to be able to do that. And then you can develop a more well-rounded approach. And that helps us with early 2021 to actually do the open house and the survey. Does that make sense, Megan? That's how I've been thinking about it, at least, in terms of kind of where we're at in schedule and, you know, keeping the process moving.
Yeah, I think that seems reasonable. I guess this is more internal to us than to you guys. I just don't want to get really excited about a couple ideas and then we haven't actually figured out how we're going to say that idea is good for the community or not. I think we've done a bit of in the last 2 years.
So, you know, with that schedule, that gives us time to, one, do some stakeholder meetings, work with you to start to, you know, get your ideas down on paper. Helps us put the survey together and the other baseline information like regulatory concerns, traffic baseline, engineering baseline, all of those pieces. And then we hit 2021 early on with the open house and survey, when people are starting to, you know, kind of come out of the holiday cocoon and ready to re-engage with a big project.
Awesome, thank you.
Step in real quick and acknowledge Alex might have to step out. He's got another city council meeting to attend tonight. Makes a quiet exit. Just let
it was actually canceled due to smoke. So we're
okay.
Grab me all night if you need it.
Much worse. Well, we don't want to be here all night anyway. So let's see.
I'm going to do one quick other one if I can.
All right.
So kind of in that of the stakeholder meetings and the community outreach, and I'm very excited to see that the Nextdoor is well integrated into this. I think that's going to be super helpful throughout the whole process. I did just want to, especially given our, you know, racial and social equity resolution recently, kind of ask, we've got, you know, up to 8 stakeholder meetings, and I'm wondering who's going to decide who the stakeholders are, how that's being figured out, you know, kind of with that lens of making sure we're not just picking the same, you know, 8 players maybe all of us normally talk to. But do you guys have ideas of how that would go?
Yeah, Megan, that's a great question. And the first thing, we've already been talking to the Nextdoor about business outreach, and they have some ideas on how to either get a small group together on Zoom or to meet in person. And they have great kind of fingers into the community in that area. I think we'll rely on them for a lot of that and essentially provide support to that. I think the other piece would be to, you know, talking to this group as well about, you know, who do we need to talk to early on? And I think there's 2 kind of groups you can think about for these stakeholders. One are interested parties who really want to be involved. Those are kind of the easy ones. The other ones are people who may not traditionally be a part of a process like this, or are people that will come to the meeting at the end and say, I never heard about it. I want to poke holes. And so we like to engage them early on too. And it's not to call anybody out, it's just to make sure that you're covering as many bases as possible throughout the early parts of the project. So that's how I would approach the stakeholder meetings, and then continue to do that through the larger public process as well.
Thank you.
Others? Mark? And then Tim?
So first of all, I absolutely love that kind of presentation and the work you guys do, and it's great. And I think that this project is so very important, at least in mine, I think a lot of other people's heads, that, you know, we have a once in a generation chance to refocus what the Heights is going to look like, kind of thing. San Luis Obispo is the example that I always have in my head, that in the mid 70s, it was, you know, terrible. It was just a tired place. And they put together a plan that lasted like 40 years before they finished the plan that they put together with Cal Poly in back in those days. And so I really want to have a plan that we can rally the community behind and have for 30 years before we build it out, right? I mean, so this $8 million is a great start. Other funding as it comes up is a great, you know, great pieces. But so that's what I think the big goal has to be. I'm really nervous that we're kicking off this rally the people behind a plan at a time that it's really hard to rally people behind anything. COVID is bad. Everyone's busy. Everyone's worried about their businesses. And I guess my big question is should this all really start in, you know, March after we lined up for a shot? Or, and coming into this meeting, that's sort of where, you know, my head was, and I guess it, just putting a question mark on it, you know, what are the, can you guys talk me down or from that opinion? Just our discussion about ODOT a second ago, how can we go into phase 2 without that answer? I don't, I don't, you know, that to me, it seems like until we've gone through the process and analyzed the asphalt and decided, you know, where the bucks line up with respect to us owning it or ODOT owning it, I don't know how we can do phase two without redoing phase two, which we don't want to do. So talk to us about how that it isn't just a $500,000 binder on a shelf. It's actually a plan for a generation. So
do you want to start, Nathan? Or?
Yeah, the discussion about the ODOT transfer, I think that definitely comes, it should come into play and be considered. We can definitely, you know, this scope has been set up as a phased process. And I don't think there's anything about phase one that can't get started with that information still be to be determined. There's obviously the benefit of kind of, you don't want to get done with phase one, lose the support or kind of excitement within the community. That's a good question. I don't know how that fits into that. And it's kind of the first that we've heard about, I think, the kind of jurisdiction transfer. It may have been mentioned before.
So I think maybe Will or Rachel, maybe you could help us understand from a timing standpoint. I mean, those are processes that can take years to do. You know, certainly.
Weeks.
Or weeks or years.
That'd be even better. I think from a timing standpoint, Mark, if that's something you're concerned about, then we should, you know, certainly, you know, talk to Will about what kind of assumed timing is for that. I think from a project standpoint, you know, there is a fair bit of baseline work to be able to do now, to where we would be into early 2021 before the height of some of these kind of more public focused pieces start to hit. But, you know, it's COVID is a tough time. But there are, you know, there is a number of things that we can do to mitigate that, as well as kind of, you know, set the project moving to show kind of, you know, a forward trajectory, you know, trajectory for the project. And that's something I would certainly feel comfortable on the schedule with, but I think, you know, Will, we'd want to talk about from an ODOT standpoint how that relates to what we're doing.
Yeah, I think a jurisdictional transfer, I think, is a bit of a red herring. I don't think it actually, you know, we can, it's just a plus. And it's something that can be done concurrently, makes things maybe more streamlined and quicker. I think what Councillor Zahn-Miller, and correct me if I'm wrong, councillors, is do we have the possibility to create a credible process that will generate buy-in in the community in this environment? And, you know, I think it would be probably disingenuous to say, to give you a strong yes, no answer, because we're really dealing in uncertain times right now. So it is very much a judgment call as far as doing it now versus later. You know, I think a couple considerations are the funding mechanism that we have itself, urban renewal, is it's supposed to pay for projects and then new tax increment pay back for those projects so that overlapping districts aren't actually ever out any money. We've gotten a little bit backwards in the Heights, and it's the timeline is getting very long that we actually haven't invested any money to produce any new tax, but we're setting aside tax money since 2011 that isn't going to our overlapping districts. So as we continue to push that out, that situation that's sort of a little wonky and a little backwards just becomes incrementally more severe. And that just has to do with the funding mechanism. You know, I think under the conditions of we want to go big and we want to move now, that's where I think the staff recommendation is MIG is our best vehicle for that. They have a lot of online tools that I think were just serendipitously a great firm to work in this environment and to continue on and create a robust process. But absolutely, this is not ideal. This is not ideal for having a really it's not the ideal conditions for public involvement during a pandemic. So there's a lot of, it's a weighing for sure. So if you want to go big and you want to continue moving forward, I think MIG is definitely the way to go. But if you want to hold off and regroup, I don't think that has merits as well.
Other counselors? Other questions? Tim?
Thanks, Kate. I think Mark brings up some good points. I'm concerned about the timing with COVID and public involvement. And I appreciated the MIG presentation. Well, thank you for the presentation, first of all. But you know, one of the things that's coming to my mind is that if we all do it online, are we excluding a certain portion of the population that may not have access to computers? So that's one issue. My second question is, I'm looking at task two in phase one, having a task one and then task two and then task three kind of implies that they're sequential. Can task two be decoupled? I mean, it seems pretty mechanical in its language. It's just something that needs to be done. Is that something that can occur first and then the outreach and all the rest of it can occur after that? Is it possible to push those tasks one and three for phase one off to later towards next summer?
Yeah, I think that is definitely something that could be done. I think Alex alluded to it when he kind of talked about kind of the way he's kind of envisions based on where we are right now on some of the outreach taking place. I would tend to say, starting a little bit, stopping for a while, just kind of from an overall kind of project team efficiency is not ideal. Mm-hmm. And you might as well, if that kind of bit can be done and kind of planned in advance, for the kind of late winter spring startup would probably be kind of the best way to go about it in my mind. But yeah, I think that is something we could work through.
Yeah, these tasks are kind of labeled as sequential one, two, and three, but a lot of these are happening at different points. You know, like the baseline existing conditions, that's stuff that we would do at the start of a project, you know, regardless. And then we would do some of task three, like the stakeholder interviews. That would happen early on, but then we would push some of the other events that I was saying probably to early 2021 to get out of the holidays, to make sure that we're able to reach out to to as many folks as possible in advance. And then I think, particularly the comment about, what about people who don't have computers, certainly being able to provide opportunity so that people can provide input that way as well too. So yeah, I think there's definitely ways to look at how these tasks are organized, and kind of with the understanding that we don't do all of task one, then all of task two, then all of task three sequentially. They're happening concurrently in bits and pieces, depending on where you're at in the project.
All right. Well, again, I think I want to be optimistic about the pandemic and where we're going to be at, but realistically. Most everything that involves like public, having the members of the public being involved is being pushed off in the spring and summer of next year. So we have a hard time envisioning that's not something that's going to happen with this project. But I think Councillor Zanmiller was correct that this is, and Megan's point too, about, wanting to get this right the first time and not having to just produce a document that's going to sit on a shelf somewhere and have it actually be actionable are good points.
Yeah, one thing I guess we could think about too for we had initially thought of an open house and survey together. You know, those are pieces we could break out separately where, you know, we could do the survey in January or get through a proposed, but we could take that kind of piece of that task, which is the open house, and push that into the spring or other places. I think there's probably some flexibility there, because I mean, it's point well taken. You know, it's hard right now for anything in person. Actually, it's illegal, you know, for anything in person. And, you know, so I think that's something we could certainly look at from a scope standpoint is, you know, what makes the most sense now versus what makes sense to, you know, take that money or that budget and kind of push it off to April. And where we're at in the project, where we kind of rethink those elements. I think there's definitely flexibility in the scope to be able to do that.
Yeah. And I would like to, I think we kind of mentioned that the kind of online survey tool is something that we had planned to do pre-COVID. And it's a tool that we have found as a firm to be extremely useful and be able to really provide good quantitative data after.
Yep, it's all the rage.
We do a lot of them. We do a lot of them.
Yeah. Gladys? Did you have anything else, Tim? Or?
No, I'm good. Thank you so much.
Okay, Gladys?
Alex and Nathan, thank you so much for your presentation. I really enjoyed it. I do echo the concerns of my peers, especially working in healthcare and knowing that we're still in COVID and we're also going into flu season and how scary that is in general. But I also have full faith knowing that the next door is involved, that they are thinking of hotspots to provide for folks as, you know, they've been a part of figuring out hotspots for our community during the time of need, especially for families who have children in school. So I do have full faith that they are thinking of these, especially on how to engage our Latino community. The tool that you showed us, which I think is awesome, you mentioned that you had used that with other communities. In those other communities, were they Latino or were they predominantly English-speaking white communities?
We've used that nationally. And so we just wrapped one up in city of Coeur d'Alene, which is about 93% white. And so that worked really well. We've also done them in city of LA County, many California cities where we're doing it in five or six languages. And so I think that's the benefit of that survey is that it is very easy to provide translated materials within that. And so we assume to be able to do that anyways. The Nextdoor provides interpretation services. And so we're relying on them to provide that direct outreach. The translation piece is something that we can handle in-house. So that takes the onus off of the Nextdoor to be able to do that. So we would do this bilingually for sure. I think the other piece that we would want to consider is if we are doing online meetings, Zoom meetings in exclusively Spanish. And so that's something that we've been doing in Central California a lot. I think it makes people more comfortable if the meeting is done just in Spanish. And that also removes the kind of issue of having to do online interpretation, which the technology is just not there for that yet. So we make sure that the meetings are accessible as much as possible. And I think, you know, we've been talking to the Nextdoor about what to translate. You know, the pieces that they think have told us are very important are the fact sheets, you know, two pagers, the outreach to businesses that can be taken to family members, to schools. Door hangers for meetings, you know, or online events, you know, those things can be easily translated. We did that in the city of Wilsonville just a couple of weeks ago. So I think those are the types of things that we would do to make sure that there's equitable access to the process. We've done this in a number of languages and a number of different communities of color, particularly in California and Texas, for these types of projects.
Perfect. Thank you.
Eric?
Thank you, Mayor, and thank you very much, MIG, for your great presentation. I won't repeat what was already said by Councillor Zan Miller and Councillor Cunahan, with whom I agree on this, and my personal instinct is, if we can, to have an assumption that we won't really have any public events until maybe sometime around the second quarter of next year. But here's my question, knowing that organizations like yours structure their pipeline in certain ways with certain assumptions, am I understanding correctly that you'd be able to work with us to maybe readjust the schedule or based on something Will said? I wasn't sure if you guys have aligned your affairs such that you sort of have to start now. Or I guess my question really is, are you capable of, in terms of your pipeline management, capable of adjusting some of these schedules around to address the concerns that have been raised tonight?
Yeah, we can adjust, and you know, I think ultimately we want to make sure that how we're adjusting is best for the project and the process, and I think that's the most important thing. And we can kind of sort through that with Will. You know, Will mentioned that the scope includes a contingency, and we can use that. You know, while you don't want to use that early, and if that's something that we need to kind of use to kind of help balance this project, we can do that. Or if there's something that we need to a different approach before we get started, we can work through that.
And just in terms of how you folks are paid, I assume, is it time and material? So you're paid for the burn as we go, as opposed to here's the $400,000? Right. Thank you.
Megan?
Yes, kind of to where Eric was going. I mean, do we have to reorganize everything? Is it possible to say, okay, we approve phase one now, but you guys just don't start until, you know, January, February or something? Or, and I don't know how that fits with you and all the sub-consultants, but is it easier to just kind of push everything versus reorganize?
But I do want to just make sure that we're all on the same page around that there is a COVID translation for every single activity. Am I hearing that the board is saying they don't want to do the COVID alternatives? They just want to have the consultant postpone what would be the conventional engagement tasks until they're safe, once they're safe to do?
That's not what I heard, Will.
Okay.
So let me see if I can interpret, and then people let me know if this is what I heard, this was correct. What I heard was, let's just take the first phase. Let's start it somewhat slower. Let's do the tasks that can be done behind the scenes, such as the work with Klein, such as the finding out the thing about ODOT and the transfer and what the work we would need to do and what that would involve. Stakeholder interviews that can be done, that would be done already with individuals versus group meetings, could be done by Zoom. You know, individuals that have businesses along the corridor, so to speak. And then let's try to time that so that when we need to do or need to try to do a public meeting, we would try to do that in the second quarter. So it's not don't start at all, maybe start a little bit late, get the behind the scenes stuff done that we can, but then we would have public engagement later, a little bit later. It now,
yeah.
Is that what I heard? Can people let me know if that's correct, what they meant? Mark?
Yeah, I think that's a possible solution versus starting in February or something like that, right? I'm going to take the soapbox and ask another question of staff, which is if we can find a way to do phase one that allows us to have, you know, an optimized public input schedule, does that work with all the other things that we've asked, you know, we've already put on your plate? Or is this a work plan review in December question? I guess the question is, have you already counted on the management of this process in this time frame, or are we given COVID and storm lines and all that stuff, or are we piling on? So that's the
question. So Thank you for the question, Council. Let me jump in. I think what you have before you is the scope, is a well-scoped project based on the input that they have received to date from MIG. I think the question for Council is, given everything that has happened in the last 6 months, you know, things have changed since MIG got this original scope. So I think the question really for Council is this one of the top two or three issues that this community, this city needs to take on in the next 3 years in this way, in this sort of expanded scope? Because what Urban Renewal started out with in the Heights was infrastructure projects. And we know that the infrastructure up there, whether it's the streets or the underground utilities, is in poor condition. So that was an infrastructure project. What this is now is a master planning process and a planning process. And those are two very different types of projects. So I think the really fundamental question for the commission to consider is this the project, given everything else that has transpired? And that's really, you know, that's your question to answer. It is the commission and the council's job to control the pace of the work that we do. And you know, I think of all city councils, you have a very solid, and commissions, very solid understanding of everything else that this city is trying to accomplish at the moment. So,
Rachel, can I clarify, when you're saying top, you know, three projects, that's for the city and city council, or that's for Urban Renewal Board?
Well, it's nearly the same people doing the work. So, you know, I think it's really important to distinguish between replacing infrastructure and doing some streetscapes and doing a very large scale master planning project. Now, that's part of why the contract is as big as it is, because we don't have the staff resources to do some of this work. So Will and MIG have done a fantastic job of programming some of that in. As we look at what 2021 brings, you know, we'll have to look at everything else that is on our plate. But right now, that's programmed into the contract. But I would not expect the same level of staff support that you get on some of the other projects, like the police facility, et cetera. That's not how this project was conceived, certainly not in this scope. We'll jump in if there's something else you want to add there.
Correct, and maybe Nathan, you can chime in as well around. We were really, really, really upfront and honest about we needed MIG to bring the horsepower here to project manage and keep this thing moving. And that we asked to make sure that was built into the budget.
Based on conversations with Will, you know, the expectation was that it would be not similar to a kind of typical public works or planning process project, where there's kind of a technical project manager on the city side who's kind of supporting the team, and there's an expectation that more would be needed from the MIG team, and that has been considered in kind of what we've provided.
Great. That's a great explanation, Rachel and Will and Nathan, of what this contract is and what kind of what we started with a while back with the other firm, and what it evolved into, and what I think a lot of the stakeholders had told us that they thought they wanted. So that's why we said go big. And that's why we have an estimate that's quite a bit higher than where we thought it would be originally. And that's why we need you to help us do all this stuff. I guess all that being said, the burden would be on MIG for the most part to get this done. But we do, you know, when we hired you to put this together, this presentation for tonight and what you would do, you know, we hadn't been in smoke for a week and COVID since the 1st of March. So You know, a lot of things have changed since that time. You know, we have an equity. We're really very concerned about equity right now, and that, and you've included that in your presentation, and that's wonderful. But we have other things to think about with that too. So I guess all that being said, and maybe this is maybe where you're coming from, Mark, a little bit more. Should we put the brakes on a little bit further until we get maybe a little bit further out of COVID before we even start? And I guess that might be a question for the full council. Gladys?
I mean, the reality of it, folks, is that we're not going to be out of COVID for some time. That's just the reality. And
Gladys, do you mean when you say sometime, some people might think sometime means
like a year, like a year
from now,
a year from now.
Okay.
So I like that COVID precautions are being included in here. The fact that the next door is involved gives me so much reassurance that if after phase one, something is found, that that's going to be brought to us as a council so that we can address whatever barriers are brought, knowing that the agency who's been doing outreach for 30 plus years is involved. So I have a lot of reassurance feeling, I feel comfortable moving forward. As long as we make sure that we are using COVID precautions first and foremost, and that that's the priority. I do believe that we can have group meetings through Zoom. It's happened before, I've been a part of them. So I have full faith that this can be done.
Okay, others? On the big picture question of starting now or soonish or waiting a while longer. Jessica?
I am, given all the discussion tonight, I am okay with starting now. And I do think, you know, Rachel's comment about how the project's gotten so much bigger. I do feel like that is kind of what you said, Mayor, about what the community's really been asking for. So I'm okay getting started and maybe having a slower start, seeing what we can do over this winter, and hoping that maybe there could be something in the spring.
I was saying, I think what we could do maybe to help with that thought is, well,
Alex, I think the mayor is asking the councilors.
I'm sorry.
I'm just going to go around to all of our Urban Renewal Board members, and then we'll have you guys give some input at the end after that. Dave?
Yes, I basically agree with Jessica. I think we could go forward, understanding that most of the stuff that we do at this point is going to be some of the backroom stuff, or it won't be the public engagement type of thing. Have an opportunity to reassess things, maybe when some of that groundwork has been done, maybe even February, March, something like that. But try not to get too much into the public engagement elements of this until then. I think the question of the size of the project, or the scope of the project, it really we've already decided. It went from infrastructure to a big project. We went big, and if we want to reassess that, I guess we can, but I think there are a lot of people, including advisory committee folks, that think we've already passed that point in terms of what this project's going to be. So, we could also say, let's just look at the whole thing again, phase one, the potential of doing that in February or March, and that could work too. I don't know how that would play out for Nathan and Alex in terms of what their expectations would be then in terms of the contract and costs that they may incur and that sort of thing by delaying the whole thing for that period of time. I'd leave them to work that out with Will, I guess, if they had to come back with some sort of different proposal. But I think it's okay to go ahead. I think if we try to wait until we're completely COVID-free and everything's back to normal, it may be quite a while. Waiting a few months probably won't make much difference. I think we ought to go ahead and initiate this and just keeping track of where we are so that we don't get too far ahead of what makes sense.
Mark?
To the big versus infrastructure improvements, I'm unmoved that we should change away from the go big. I think if we spent the urban renewal money to do, you know, fix up sidewalks and roads, that's what my great grandkids would have still. So I'm hip to the staying big. Like I said, I came into this being pretty sure that delaying the whole thing 6 months was a really good idea. I still think that's the lowest risk way to do it. I have confidence in MIG and their skill set, and if I would go along with adding a little bit of risk and slow rolling the front end, if that's where people go. I think the lowest risk thing is to stop and wait and then pick up the big thing later. But it's nicely wishy-washy, isn't it? So there you go. So.
Tim?
I agree that the Heights deserves this project for sure. So I think the scope of it is certainly fine by me. I'm just going to echo what Mark said. I think the safest thing to do is to wait a little bit, and it probably would be more certain, in my opinion, to have a more normal public involvement scenario. So I'm a little concerned about starting right now. But again, there are some things that I think that as project sponsors mentioned that can be done as long as we try to push the public involvement thing off as much as possible. So we can have a better chance of engaging with the public in a more public way. That would be my preference. So maybe it's not putting off 6 months. Maybe it's just putting off a few months. I don't know what would be the expected start date, anyways. But again, if we can push the public involvement part off towards spring and summer. I understand Councillor Rivera's concern that it's going to last a year from now. But who knows? It would just increase the probability that we would have that engagement. So again, go big. That's perfectly fine. I think the scope is great. But if we can increase the chance of public involvement, that's the important thing for me.
Megan?
I agree that I think go big is still where we need to go to answer community questions and meet community needs. I think this scope of work is a really good outline of how to get there. I actually somewhat a counter to Tim's and some other folks. I think there's some potential benefits to not being the normal public process that tends to only bring out the normal people, where if Alex and Nathan mentioned they're able to actually do an open house both at lunch and an evening meeting, it might actually bring out some other people than we normally get. Certainly anything with COVID, honestly anything outside of COVID, we need to be very aware of the limitations of various members of the community. Again, going back to the next doors is a great addition, but even beyond that of kind of how we used to do when these meetings first started on Zoom, of providing a place in person if there's some folks who can't join an online meeting or anything like that. So I would be comfortable with this. I kind of big picture to Rachel's question of, is this one of my top three projects for the next 3 years? Like, I have no idea how to answer that without actually going through a whole what are all the other projects we have on the line. And we have, you know, 17 probably at this point. So if that's a legitimate question staff needs answered to really outline this, I don't know how to make that decision tonight. We know within urban renewal, as a sidestep of, you know, obviously still same city staff and all of council, it's clearly the top priority for urban renewal. But for larger city capacity, I don't know.
Thanks, Megan. Eric?
Thank you, Mayor. First, I would say, as others have said, there's no question in my mind that we are sticking with the Go Big model. This is a great proposal. And to me, what the question is more of one of how do we as a city manage this contract and manage the project? And I would also share confidence that we can get a lot of work done during COVID. The city has proven that that's true. And I think we're a vibrant community and can do that. My concern with COVID is not just COVID, but the distraction of COVID, so that there's the health risk, but there's also the distraction that we have, you know, key constituencies involved that are just completely distracted. You know, the business community on the Heights, for example, would be one group that might not have as much bandwidth to think about this right now because of COVID, separate from the health concerns. So I guess my feeling is I would be entirely comfortable just putting off this contract 6 months, assuming that MIG is, you know, on board with that, because they of course have a say because they plan their bandwidth accordingly. But short of that, I would also be comfortable with moving forward now, leaving it to the discretion of those directly involved at MIG and staff to reorder things or just order in the first instance things in the most appropriate way, with an expectation that the in-person stuff wouldn't really start until, you know, plus or minus the second quarter of 2021. Part of my reason for saying that too is the Heights right now is in a static situation. I mean, there are things that we can do to make it more beautiful. We need to do that. And this is what this project is all about. But, you know, unlike our water problems down at the port, unlike the low-income housing that isn't built yet, it's sort of in a stable environment. And so to me, it's okay to take a breath, take 6 months, take 3 months, whatever it is, to make sure we just get this right, because this really is a project for the generations. And not just the health, but the distraction caused by COVID may cause us, certainly if we start doing the public involvement in the fourth quarter of 2020, which would not be my preference, it may cause us to miss the mark in some fashion. And because the height is in a static condition, I just don't see the risk in delaying a little bit. So those are my thoughts, either delay 6 months or reconfigure to have public involvement not start until the second quarter of 2021, plus or minus.
Okay, thank you, everyone. I think I'm echoing kind of Mark, Tim, and Eric at this point. I'm okay with waiting 6 months. I'm also okay with starting as slow as we possibly can to do, like I said, behind the scenes work and interviews that can be done by Zoom of stakeholders. I would be okay with leaving it up to staff to work with MIG on coming up with a timeframe for how this thing would start and play out. I do agree with Gladys that we will probably be in this for another year, COVID. Likely, we're gonna have some people that might be able to get some vaccines in the spring, but probably not everyone. And so it's gonna be a long, drawn out process when we get to that. And it is a distraction, as Eric had mentioned, for people, even if they feel like I'm okay, I wear my mask, I'm not sick, it's still a distraction from what normal is for us. So I'm okay to kind of take this out further. I do want to go big. I do think that this presentation by MIG is fantastic. I want us to use MIG for sure. I think that's, you know, what you guys have laid out here is fantastic. And I think we should, if we can, approve phase one and the contingency and let staff and MIG work out how we can kind of go slow to get this going. Do I have head nods on that? I'm trying to wrap up what I hear from the bulk of people here. Megan?
So I am still stuck on the Rachel question of, like, if we approve this because it's the one thing in front of us, or like, what are we giving up for 3 years?
Yeah, thanks, Counselor. And we've heard you on the go big. I think my point is more one of timing, which you've all considered, and the fact that given COVID and this environment, you know, is this the right time to start this project? We had this project in our work plan. So we are planning on this. You know, I think we will be planning on this now for the next several years. And so that's just something for council to be aware of. But I feel like this group has a very good sense of what the other high priority projects are.
And I want to try and remind what from what Will said is that, you know, the other districts have been giving up money for 9 years now, and it's we've had some momentum on this for the last couple years, and so I don't want to just completely lose that. You know, I know times have changed, but I think we can continue forward slowly on it. Do you need a motion, Will? Or?
Yeah, and maybe, Mayor, if it's okay to ask Alex and Nathan, we've already discussed how we were not gonna have timelines and be very fluid, so that fits in very well. I just wondered maybe if comments about how, based on what you've heard tonight, do you see play and flexibility in there for the public involvement piece to be pushed out towards more like spring?
Yeah, we do. Alex, do you want to?
Yeah, I think, you know, the conversations are, I think, consistent with what we've been talking about. I think certainly, you know, in-person events are not something we expected anytime soon. I think there's a lot of baseline information we have to do anyways that we could start on. That, to be honest, takes a few months to get into. One thing, I do think in the winter, an online survey is not a bad idea after the holidays. That's something we've seen, you know, on many of our projects, actually really high response rates for surveys, as long as we can do the right outreach in advance to get the word out, make sure that it's translated, make sure that it's accessible. And then you hold the public, you know, kind of more the public, kind of in-person public until it's safe to be able to do that. So I think there is certainly ways to kind of manage the scope and tasks to start working now without that risk, and then, you know, looking at what we've done for specific task items like the online open house and survey, breaking those up. So, and then just, you know, placing that open house at a different spot within the scope. So it keeps the project moving. It keeps the community engaged in what you've been talking about for that, you know, for this area. But also, I think doesn't push a project down the road that, you know, realistically, you can do a lot of this stuff now and have really no impact on kind of what a public process is going to be, like traffic, survey, baseline, regulatory analysis, all that stuff can happen now without an impact to the project. So certainly that phase one, I think, can happen. I do think, Will, we probably want to identify a process chart, maybe not put times to it, but when things happen. And I think if that's acceptable to the council, and I apologize, Mayor, for interrupting you earlier. If it's acceptable to the council for what that timeline might be, I think that would probably put the council in a little bit more comfort in kind of what specific tasks would happen and kind of what that public process would look like. So I think that's something Nathan and I can do pretty quickly, and that allows you to get this project going without having to worry about, you know, what 6 months down the road looks like, because to be honest, we don't know kind of what this is all gonna be. My kids want to play basketball, and I want them to go play basketball because they're making me crazy. But yeah, we just don't know what it's gonna look like in 6 months.
Well, I appreciate you being able to be flexible. And I don't think that we would be worried so much about timelines if we weren't in the situation with the COVID right now. Mm-hmm. So you guys being able to be flexible is very much appreciated.
Yeah, that's certainly a part of this scope. And I think that's been part of the conversation all night about, you know, doing this by phase, making sure we're checking in at the right times, making sure we're aligned with you and the community as it moves forward, understanding that there's other questions about ODOT and kind of where businesses and community members want to go with this project. We had assumed that's what that would look like, and that the public process would mirror that technical, the technical components of the scope as well.
Great, thank you. Anything else? We do need a motion, and it would be for the approval of phase one, in addition to the contingency fund, which is $40,000. And I don't know about the underground survey. Do you need that, Will, or not? No, because we may need something else from Klein, but that would be separate from this.
It's a phase two piece. It's depending on what concepts are identified, will determine whether or not we need that underground survey.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I'll take a stab at a motion. I authorize the Urban Renewal Agency to execute a contract with MIG for phase one and contingency possibly slower timeline related to COVID for staff to determine.
Great, thank you, Jessica. We have a motion.
I second that motion.
Jessica's made the motion and Gladys has made a second. Additional discussion? Okay, roll call vote. Jessica?
Aye.
Gladys?
Aye.
Dave?
Aye.
Eric?
Aye.
Mark?
Yes.
Tim?
Aye.
Megan?
Yes.
And chair votes aye. Great. That was a very long discussion on that, but you know, this whole scope is almost $500,000, and it's a really big deal for our Heights district to be starting down this path. So it deserved a lot of attention and discussion. So thank you everyone for being very thoughtful on this tonight. Thank you, Alex and Nathan, for joining us. Really appreciate it. Do you need anything else from us, Will, on that?
No, we're all set. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks.
All right. Thank you. Anything else from agency members? If you've got anything else regarding urban renewal, go ahead and raise your hand. I don't see any hands raising, so we are going to adjourn the Urban Renewal Agency meeting at 7:43. Thank you. All right, let's 4 minutes, everyone, and then we'll readjourn for city council in 4 minutes. Thanks, everybody. We will resume the Hood River City Council meeting now. We did not have anyone for business from the audience that was signed up for tonight. So we'll go into work session. Agenda additions or corrections?
No, Mayor, we have none.
Okay. So fourth quarter financial, Will.
Okay, now we're getting into my strongest suit. Thank you, Mayor. So we have the year-end financials for you. This is a rough cut of how 1920 ended up. It still needs to go through the whole audit process, so there could be little tweaks here and there, but we think this is a pretty good look at how the actuals turned out for the end of 1920. This is a little off cycle. Usually we don't bring this to you until a couple more, a month out from now, but we figured that more check-ins on finances during these unprecedented times is better. You know, we had some pretty, I think, good, solid conservative predictions built into how the year was going to end up. Those have essentially played out. We're going into next fiscal year with a little over 3.5, and what we had budgeted for was a little bit over 3.4 million. So we're pretty much right on the dot as far as the financial plans that we made as COVID-19 was taking off in March and April, and built into the report that was given to you in May, and also the assumptions that were built into the adopted budget. So nothing in the way that May and June played out is really substantially affecting how I think the adopted 2021 budget will play out. I don't think, not yet seeing any major revisions that are needed. Lodging receipts didn't get hit, got hit very bad, but not as bad. Parking meter receipts were hit a little bit worse than what we were expected. And that's kind of how things played out, I'd say, across a lot of different revenue line items, where something was a little bit not as bad. Some other things were a little bit worse. Some things that we thought might go up didn't actually. And it kind of all averaged out so that the bottom line is right in line with our longer term, more macro forecast of the general fund. So, you know, it's hard to say feeling good. It doesn't feel good when your revenues drop nearly $700,000 below what you thought they were going to be. But I feel good that that the predictions and the scenario planning that showed that we are going to be stable through the next year are playing out. And we know that we can still rely on that. So that's sort of where what I take out of the numbers through the end of fiscal year 2019-20. We're seeing some recovery in transient room tax receipts, you know, only down 40% for July stays that we received the money in August, versus it was down almost, it was almost non-existent there for a month or two. So it's good to see coming back. That's a hopeful sign and right in line with what we're looking at. So the next, and I'd say one other sort of piece of note that I took a little comfort in is that the spike we were seeing in utility accounts receivable sort of went back into normal seasonal lines. And I would also mention that even before we got the check to the Mid-Columbia Community Action Council, they, I guess our credit is good with them. They started sending out utility assistance checks, and we started getting accounts being paid down. So that money's out and rolling. But this sort of correction down into where utility accounts receivable would have been even prior to that. So, you know, all in all, we're in a pandemic and our revenues are greatly impacted, but the ship is stable. And I think we'll be in a really good position that most other cities aren't, to see what this next 3 months has to do and then take a really deliberative approach to how we build a proposed budget for the next fiscal year and work that through in a very, I think we'll be able to do it in a very methodical and deliberate way. Which is certainly a luxury compared to some other cities, and something that this council's long-term fiscal outlook, I think, has bought us that luxury. So that's what we said when the budget was being developed, and I think it's still the case. So that'll open up to questions about any specific line items.
Questions, anyone? Eric?
Thank you very much, Will. Great report. I had a question just about a detail about how utility charges are being addressed. And my question arises from the context of landlord-tenant. And I'm just curious, if we have a residential tenant who isn't paying the utilities, are we billing the landlord? And are, or is it stay with the tenant? I just wondered how that is working. And depending on your answer, I might have some follow-up questions.
Sure. Yeah, that's tricky. That's been a very tricky process through the emergency declaration that was put into effect, where we're not doing shutoffs, we're not doing late payment, late penalties, interests, and fees, but charges continue to accrue. And in Hood River, all landlords and property owners co-sign on their tenants' accounts. So they are jointly responsible for the charges that are accruing. And usually they'll get a heads up when it gets to the point that we're doing a shutoff. That notice will go both to the tenant and to the landlord. That communication loop was broken, and that's something we identified a few weeks ago. And so just last week, we sent out a notice to all the tenants who would be getting shutoff notices, letting them know you are accumulating a balance. And much of this info we've already sent out in many mailings, telling them, please do not ignore the balance. And here are, and we list options like Community Action Council to help get utility assistance and discounts, point them to where to look for food assistance and cash for families and whatnot through, and child care assistance through Department of Human Services and all that. And then this latest one also let them know that this notice from now on would also be going to the landlord because they're jointly responsible for the account and need to be aware of the balance.
Great, thank you. And I know that's a little off topic, but I've heard some anecdotes about this creating a little tension in the community. And I know this isn't on the agenda, but my thought would be that as we get through this COVID period, hopefully find a way to not create the landlords arguing with the tenants over it, because it clearly is a tenant obligation, but there is this period that they have to pay it off. There's some opportunities, and want to just try to minimize those frictions, as obviously you're trying to do as well based on what you just said. So thank you.
Just anecdotally, some owners of properties include the water and sewer in the rent. I mean, they just make it the rent higher, and then they have the bill sent to them so that there is no, the bill always gets paid. So, I mean, that's just how some of them do it. Who had their hand up? Mark?
Hey, Will, this is all good. Thanks for being on top of it. So I guess my question have you learned anything from the data or how things are coming in that we're going to make micro adjustments between now and the budgeting process? How are we turning the steering wheel in real time when we have this data coming in?
Yeah. You know, I tried to hit on it during, we're flying right on target, really coming in. I mean, I wish I was this good at forecasting, but to be, there's gotta be some level of luck involved. So the plans as we made them, that picture is coming into focus, and it's still pretty right on. You know, we're going to continue to be cautious and keep options open through into September, October, when we get the Q1 numbers in. But once those Q1 numbers are in, I think we've got half of the picture now. I think we're going to get much closer to like 85% of the picture once we have the Q1 numbers in, because that's then we have the entire peak season pretty much, and we'll know pretty well. I don't think we need too many mid-cycle adjustments, all subject to change based on facts on the ground, the fires, notwithstanding. it's possible that the fires could really tank our parking revenues even more. Or surprisingly, as happened, as I've learned through some of our ice storms, I've been hearing anecdotally that the hotels are full right now. So sometimes you don't know which way things are going to break based on what you think is maybe negative news, how it will really turn out.
Yeah.
But I think we're going to be set to do a normal annual resetting of the course without the need for emergency mid-cycle course corrections.
I was thinking more on the related to behavior changes, what we're prioritizing and stuff versus whether the budget adjustments are going to be required. So, you guys are doing great. I'm glad things are coming in like we want. So keep guessing perfectly, Will.
No pressure, Will.
Additional comments or questions? Yeah, great, great predictor. He's got a great crystal ball. I don't know where he got that, but it's a good one. Okay. You don't need a motion or anything. That was just an update, correct?
Information only.
Information. Okay. Okay, great. Thank you. I'm trying to look at my agenda and make sure that no one's raising their hand or wants to say something. So we'll go ahead and adjourn the work session and we'll open the regular council meeting. Any additions or corrections?
No, Mayor, we have none.
Okay. We have a consent agenda with council minutes from August 24th and August 31st. Do I have a motion?
I move that we approve the consent agenda.
I'll second.
Jessica's made a motion to approve the consent agenda and Megan has seconded. Additional discussion? Seeing none, roll call vote. Jessica?
Aye.
Eric?
Aye.
Megan?
Yes.
Gladys?
Aye.
Tim?
Aye.
Mark?
Yes.
Chair votes aye. Regular business item. Awarding professional services contract for preliminary design of the elevated sewer replacement. Wade?
Good evening. So this item is regarding replacing the city's elevated sewer line. It's kind of for most people, an out of sight, out of mind thing, if people even know it exists, but it's about a half mile long, running roughly between the Mount Hood Railroad Depot and below the Dawasco this print building. It's about 70 years old, so it's getting to the end of its lifetime. It's in a very vulnerable location, both from the possibility of being broken through trees falling, rail cars, truck leaving the interstate. We actually had, I guess it was 4 or 5 years ago, train maintenance crew broke a smaller section of it. I think it's an 8-inch line that is above ground from Full Sail area. It goes under the railroad tracks and tees in. It got hit with a railroad tie and broke. No one even knew it was broke for several days. Crews have to walk any equipment in there. There's no way to drive to it. Any leak is an environmental issue too. It borders the big wetland. So a year and a half ago, we applied for a grant from FEMA. They had some leftover money from the Eagle Creek fire that we sort of got first chance at just being in the county. And they had some turnover. We expected to receive this last summer, and I guess we received it in December, but we weren't notified that we received it until about February, I think it was. So we just went out for an RFP for preliminary design with the main idea of really tying down exact location and type construction cost estimate, real estate needs. It's a rather large project, so we're kind of stepping stone to get to it. Want to get some good numbers to apply for another round of grants for actually finishing the design and building it. It's sort of long term. If we stick with the same FEMA program, it's kind of a year at a time before you, between applications. The next application will be over a year from now, and they take about a year to decide who gets them. So we're trying to get in line as soon as we can. We did have some really great proposals. A lot of people did their homework. I was really happy with the turnout we got.
Wade, if I could just jump in here, I do want to recognize Wade's work in identifying this source of funds and applying for this grant. So thanks, Wade. This is a really important project, and I appreciate your work on it.
Thanks. Questions?
Megan?
Couldn't find the mute button. I guess two questions. So at the staff report talked about, you know, aligning this project with the waterfront storm line. Is this in the wetland that we would be, you know, running the storm water from downtown potentially through, or?
It more or less borders the north side of that same wetland.
Okay, but it's on the border. It's not like in the wetland if we have to do mitigation.
Some of the piers may encroach
more, in. More or less.
I'm hopeful that we can work the two projects together with the agencies on this. The timing's a little bit off. I wish this one was first, but.
Right. Well, I guess that was when you're talking about the funding timelines, it seems like they aren't going to like be at the same time that we'd be working in or next to the wetland for both.
I don't think so. I think they're probably going to be about a year apart.
Okay, fair.
But hopefully we can still use some mitigation measures between the two projects.
That'd be great, yeah, and save some money. So kind of in that, I guess, and I'm forgetting what the storm line was, but like the likely implementation for this project, assuming funding comes together, it would be what, 2 years out, 3 years out, or?
It would be another year to apply. So in the end of 21, into 22, before we would find out if we got it through this same grant cycle. So.
Okay, so maybe 23.
At the earliest. Yeah, probably more like 23.
Okay, awesome. Thank you, Wade.
And I think too on that's pending, you know, this particular funding source. So we may choose to look at other sources of funding given the issues with this.
Fair. Thank you, Rachel.
Additional questions, Mark?
So I bet it's in here. This is all part of the sewer fund capital plan, I assume.
Yes.
And was this 30% drawing, was it about what the spreadsheet for capital plan had estimated for that drawing set?
Yes, we have the $400,000 in the budget for this year, just because it's, you know, we have to get reimbursed as we go, but yeah, we'll get $300 of it back.
All right, keep finding money like this, that's great. So,
Tim?
Thanks, Mayor. There is a task in here called property acquisition.
I think that was an alternate or an optional.
Yeah, it says property appraisal.
Yes,
appraisal. So on and so forth. And there's like a, there's like four properties listed. one of them is the Mount Hood Railroad. The other one is Port of Hood River property, ODOT, so on and so forth.
Yeah.
So what do you anticipate
so
that our need would be?
The larger of the two pump stations would be located near the Mount Hood Railroad Depot. What we're thinking is, as you go into the entrance, just to your right, there's a kind of little corner that's not really in use. I think there's some power equipment in there. A little spot like that where we could put the pump station, that is the low point in the basin. So it's a likely site for it. The other acquisition would be west of the Union Building. There's sort of an interior small basin that doesn't drain out to the other low point. So it would be a little parcel in there. Then there would be an easement from there to the west, all alongside the Union Pacific Railroad. It's mostly port property, not railroad property. And then we may need some easement from ODOT. So the only actual, other than an easement, there's two little spots for actual acquisition of property.
Thanks.
I'll just ask a couple questions right now because of Tim's question. So is the $400,000 include the appraisals or not?
It does, not and the acquisition, just
not the acquisition, just the appraisal. Okay. All right. Great. Thanks.
Folks, I am over here searching like a crazy woman for what you guys are talking about, and I have zero idea. It is not included in my packet that I'm looking at, and I've gone through both packets.
It was sent separately late Friday because we didn't have it with the other information that we got on Thursday. So you should have it in your city email on Friday. I believe it was Friday, wasn't it?
It was Friday. I didn't get the draft scope until Friday morning.
That was, and I think Jennifer sent it. That's what I'm looking at on my
phone. And I can bring up the picture that's in there, the map on my screen here. Tried to share it.
Okay, why don't you do that, Wayne? Wade, we're waiting for
it. Can everyone see the map?
No, we're waiting for it. It's just a blank screen right now. Now we see your desktop.
Okay. How about this?
It's your desktop.
Hmm.
Well, there's my favorite moments.
How about that?
Nope. It says you're sharing it, but it's just blank.
I think it's thinking. So, oh, there it is.
Oh, there you go.
So the two parcels are right down here by the railroad and right in here.
And that's where the pump stations would be.
Yes.
Okay. Maybe you could point out, since this is the first time Gladys has seen this, where the elevated sewer is that's broken or that's last leg.
Not broken yet, Kate.
Not broken yet. It's on its last leg.
It comes out of the ground in this area, and it runs on piers all the way along to roughly here.
Mm.
And then it actually has a little T that comes across somewhere near this pump station. So the only way to access it is to drive underneath the freeway, park here, and walk the whole way, which is knee deep in water in the winter on the one side of the pipe and all blackberries on the other side.
Mayor, I had a question.
Jessica, go ahead.
I was fine with this contract, and I appreciate all your work, Wade. Mostly I was just wondering if you have any ideas of what the final cost is going to be. I'm just wondering, like, how bad is it going to be?
We had some very preliminary estimates with all the alternatives. I think it was about $2.3
million. Okay, thank you.
Councillor, this is not an emergency. This is something that we have been anticipating. So this is in the capital plans and therefore our budgets.
So that's why you're saying we had the $400,000 to do this, to start this, but we're going to be able to be reimbursed about $300,000 from FEMA. So that's, I mean, which is fantastic. Is that correct?
Yes, correct.
Yeah, that's terrific. And then, we'll have to look at ways to pay for the eventual replacement, but that is something that we have been anticipating needing to do. So we'll have to see what the construction costs come in at, and then we'll evaluate at that point. But certainly saving this $400,000, thanks to Wade's work, on the grant will help.
Right. I'm looking to see if anyone has their hand raised, because I don't, with the screen share, I can't see everyone.
Is anyone? Why don't you stop sharing? Make it a little bigger. There you go.
Yes.
Okay. Additional questions? I don't see any. This packet, the second, or I guess it would be second, third packet, we had our urban renewal, our regular packet, and this one on Friday, there is a recommended motion.
So I move that we authorize the city manager to sign a professional services contract with Tetra Tech for preliminary design of the elevated sewer replacement project in an amount not to exceed $400,000.
I'll second.
Megan has made a motion and Tim has seconded that motion to authorize the city manager to sign a professional services contract with Tetra Tech for preliminary design not to exceed $400,000. Additional discussion? Eric?
Yes, Mayor, I'm fully supportive of this project, and thank you, Wade, for what sounds like going the extra mile. Due to an indirect business interests of my employer with some of the firms that actually are not being recommended, it's not Tetra Tech, there could be some perception of bias on my part. So. Although I support of this, because of that potential relationship issue, I'm going to recuse myself from the vote.
Okay, thank you for that disclosure, Eric. Appreciate it. Okay, roll call vote. Jessica?
Aye.
Tim?
Aye.
Megan?
Yes.
Mark?
Yes.
Gladys?
Yes.
And Eric, you're officially
present.
Present and abstaining.
Yes, thank you.
Recusing. Okay. Chair votes aye. Motion has been approved. Thank you, Wade, for all your work on this.
Appreciate thank you.
Let's see here. Department heads. Chief Damian, do you have anything?
I don't, Mayor. Thank you very much.
Chief Holste?
The only thing I would say, I don't know if you've looked at Facebook, Paige had put our use of force, council's pledge. I'm not a Facebooker, but it is open to the public if you get a chance. Had some great responses. The only one that Mr. Gibson, some of you may know, had some less than unique comments, I guess I'll say, on the post. But other than that, that's all I have.
Okay, great. Let's see, Dustin is not on this evening, is he? No, okay.
No, Mayor, Dustin's excused from the meeting.
Okay, all right. Any other announcements? Okay, Mayor Call. So just report on the Bi-State Working Group for the bridge replacement. And that's going really well. The most fantastic news we received is that we received a $5 million, what's called a build grant. And the county, Klickitat County, actually was involved with the port in getting the build grant. So what this money will do is just allow the working group and all the work that needs to be done preliminarily for replacement to continue after the environmental impact study is finished. So that study will be finished. We're hoping late spring next year, maybe summer. And then this $5 million will be, you know, just to continue the work to start drawings, talking to the tribes. I mean, there's a lot of work to be done. And so we were extremely excited that we received the $5 million build grant. So we just found out last week. So that was good news. And then what the Bi-State Working Group is working on right now is a more official memorandum of understanding between all the parties that have been a working group up to this point. And so we have a very skeleton of an MOU drafted. And if you'd like, we can send that out so everyone can kind of look at it, but it's just preliminary right now. So the working group is gonna kind of sift through that. And then it'll be sent to all the entities, ours included, for approval so that we can become much more official and then eventually morph into a bi-state commission. And so there would be, or we're hoping to be able to do that. There'll be some discussion with the legislatures this year just to get it on their radar that is what we would like to do. Because we will have a lot better chance in getting funding, whether it be state, federal, or even through P3, private builder, if we become this kind of bigger bi-state entity to get it done. So look forward to getting a copy of that. But don't take your red pencil to it, because I'm sure it's going to change. It's just going to be a rough draft to start with. Tomorrow, we start our stakeholder meetings for homeless. And so that's really great. Providence is funding that process, and all the stakeholders have been interviewed, and we have a contract with the person who is going to bring us all together for about a 2.5-hour meeting tomorrow. And, you know, we were really thrilled that during COVID, all the homeless had been housed early on in the COVID situation in March and maybe into April. And so if we can do it, we should figure out, you know, how this can happen on a more permanent basis. So that's what we're going to be discussing tomorrow. The other thing is I, after our meeting with the county, I did call and talk to Mike Oates, and he said that he and Jeff, the city manager, Jeff Hexel, are trying to get some additional information from Trish. And I think they're going to have a presentation, or they're hopefully, if she can get it together, at their next county commission meeting regarding more testing. They haven't said, oh yeah, yes, we absolutely are going to do it yet, but they're gathering more information, and that's as much as I know about that. As soon as I know more, I'll let you guys know about it. That's all I've got. Mark?
I don't have anything worth keeping us up late, so I'm good.
Megan?
Would this be a good time to report back on conversations with commissioners about the police sheriff facility, or when do you want to do that, Kate?
We could, I guess. I don't know if we wanted to get a big, a long discussion. I mean, we could just say they're...
And okay, I have an update on that.
Oh, you have an update? Okay.
I have an update on that. And I see that Will's still on. The commissioners, I believe, are going to talk about this at a public meeting on the 21st.
Jeff Hexel asked me to put together some talking points and presentations, so I'm going to help out with that.
Okay, great. Well, that pretty much covers it, because...
We at least piqued their interest then.
Well, I got my commissioner was interested and wanted to have a joint meeting, so yay. And then for the two people from public listening and anyone else, I was just looking at the census results through September 11th, and the city's response rate is about 30% lower than the state in general. And I know the census feels really small compared to everything else going on, but if everyone could reach out to their networks and try to get responses up, that'd be good, because yeah, we're in the low 60% and it's not great. So I'm gonna work on that on my end, but spread the word to you all. So, and thank you.
Thanks, Megan. Jessica?
Thanks, Mayor. I had two things. One, just give an update since I've talked in prior meetings about the business grants that we had through MCED. That round of funding is ended. I don't have the finals on how much we gave out in Hood River County, but I think it's around 70,000 and we had hoped for 100. So, but one of the good news is that the state of Oregon, Business Oregon, is going to use some more of their CARES money to give out as additional grants. And so MCED expects to get additional money, and it will have, they're still talking to the state, asking for some lifting of the restrictions that have made it difficult to get these funds out. We're hopeful that more businesses will be able to be helped, and that money has to get out super fast. So as soon as I have some money, I will let everyone know. The second thing is I was thinking, so after our last regular meeting where we had discussed the police facility, I started thinking about policing and our equity resolution and next steps, and we completed the review of the use of force policies and statistics, and it shows that this department is really different. Where the community policing model that we use is one that works with the community to focus on building those ties instead of developing adversarial roles. So what I've been thinking about a couple of things. One is that I think we need to do more to communicate that work and get community feedback. And I know I did see the Facebook post yesterday, which I think was the first one, and it promised more. And I know that the city's communication channels have been very busy with COVID messaging and now with wildfire. So, but I don't want us to lose the opportunity to talk about this work. So I think other communications would be good, maybe a press release. And then I'm also thinking about how I hear support for our police from council and how I support our police, but how do we give them the tools to do their jobs even better? So one of the items that is in the equity resolution and one of the top legislative priorities that we talked about when we talked about the League of Oregon Cities things is mental health. And we've had the same number of police officers since 2003. So I'm not necessarily interested in defunding the police if it means fewer officers, because the city has not grown our police force in a long time, 17 years. But what defunding the police could mean is supporting them by figuring out how pieces of what we ask them to do could be better handled by others. So I just wanted to plant the seed or to get people to think about a council work plan item that would bring partners together to evaluate the community's mental health and addiction needs and determine how best to meet those. And I don't see the city's role as providing mental health services, but if it means that we're supporting the health and safety of our community and alleviating some of the burden on our police, then I think we could be the leader inviting people to the table. So that's kind of the pieces I want to plant. One about some more communications on the use of force and then see where else the community has questions and then some next steps around mental health and addiction. And maybe other folks have done assessments that I don't know about. Councilor Rivera might know that, but that's where I, anyway, just to plant a seed.
Thank you, Jessica. That's a very good seed to be planting. Tim?
Thanks, Mayor. Not much happening here. I will say that the tree committee continues to sally forth, whether it's COVID or smoke or whatever, it just doesn't make any difference to these folks. They're really committed to their cause and they schedule a meeting for October 6th from 12 to 1. So anyways, that's a shout out for them and Dan Ball in particular, who is doing a great job of keeping the effort going. So that's pretty much what I've got. I know that everybody's experiencing this, but the smoke conditions are just horrid. And I feel for our entire community having to go through this. I keep on hoping for wind, but then I think to myself, what is the wind gonna do except for blow it somewhere else? So I'm just hoping for rain and that this goes away sometime soon.
Thanks, Tim. Gladys?
Thank you, Mayor. I want to piggyback on that, what Councilor Mehta brought up. You know, as we were looking over the financials, I did look at the police budget and thought the same thing. How can we, not necessarily as a city hire, but how can we help facilitate so that our police does have better support in order to meet our community's needs? So thank you for bringing that up. I do want to take a moment to thank our firefighters, our first responders, and all of our volunteers who have put themselves at risk to ensure our safety. I also want to thank all the growers and the farm workers that are out there working in these conditions. Thank you for providing us with food. Se lo agradecemos muchísimo. Gracias por darnos de comer. I also want to thank the mayor and the group of firefighters that traveled from Guanajuato, Mexico, Ashland, Oregon, sister city, who have been coming for 50 years to come and share their services. So, gracias por ayudarnos en este tiempo cuando lo necesitamos. And I also want to remind folks that coronavirus, COVID-19, is very real and that it's still prevalent in our community and that we still have to take precautions. So I am going to talk in more detail of the importance of why you have to wear a mask or you should wear a mask. The coronavirus moves through tiny air, invisible droplets of saliva or mucus that we exhale. Speaking, coughing, or just breathing heavily can spread the virus. So common symptoms are fever, fatigue, cough, loss of smell, but not everyone who has COVID-19 symptoms shows these signs. So people without symptoms may infect others without realizing it. Large droplets carry about 6 feet and smaller droplets can go much farther. So for safety, it's important that you try and keep a 6 feet distance from folks. Wearing a mask or cloth covering to cover your nose and your mouth blocks the droplets from moving through the air. Wearing a mask reduces how far the droplets can travel. So it's important that we mask up and we encourage others to do so to help protect me, help protect you and everyone else around us. It's important that we wash our hands frequently, that we avoid close contact, and that we limit our gatherings to a group of less than 10. The last point that I wanted to bring up is we're looking at all these fires that are happening around us, and I hope folks see that climate change is real. It is a very real thing. And science really does know. Science knows. It's alive, it's kicking, folks. And we really have to make some changes now in order to have our children, our grandchildren grow up in a planet, right? So I wanted to bring up those important points. Please, please continue to wear your mask. If you don't have a mask, reach out to me and I can absolutely point you in the direction where you can have a mask. Especially right now, please make sure that you're wearing those KN95s or N95s if you do have access to that, as they do help with the smoke. If you are able to stay inside, please do so. And if you are supported to work from home, please do so, as working outside, the air quality is not good conditions for folks. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you, Gladys. Eric?
Thank you, Mayor. Just three brief points. First, on this fire, I guess to state what we're all experiencing out loud, you know, we have this emergency within our pandemic, and I guess, and we have other communities in Oregon that have burned to the ground. It's just a moment of thanks for me that we are still here. I mean, this atmosphere that we are missing makes me thankful and looking forward to getting it back and how precious it is to have clean air. I think the city's communications around this fire emergency have been very good. And so I want to commend staff. We have people in our community who are even more isolated now than they were during COVID, which has already put them in isolation, not able to go outside physically. So I just think the quality of the communications has been very positive. So good work. And, you know, our local police department and local fire department have been in high alert, undoubtedly dealing with these things locally, even though the fire isn't here, the smoke is here causing an effect. And I just personally would like to thank Chief Holstey and his team and Chief Damien for his team. These guys and gals are out there breathing this air for the safety of others. And they deserve our thanks because they are our local heroes. With respect to the mental health issue, I think that actually also been in my mind, and looking for a way to provide, either orchestrate or provide additional resources seems like a good idea. Providence and its foundation is an idea that's on their radar. I sit on that board, and there may be some resources somehow to cooperate there. There's also people in the community like Ellie Bayo, who have a heart for this issue, that would be a good resource. Someone that grew up here that I know and others probably know as well. So finding a way to help our police department sounds like a great idea on that issue. And then lastly, on the police department building, my commissioner was Commissioner Benton. He and I spoke, and he was just to report, he was very warm to the idea of at least exploring the possibility of a collaboration. I also spoke with retired Judge Crowley, who is no longer a judge, but has a certain knowledge base about all of this. And he indicated to me that Commissioner Joplin, who I actually don't know, I know her husband, but she spent a lot of effort on this in recent years. And Commissioner Benton told me that they actually got close to this. The state was apparently, when I say this, a new courthouse is what I'm really saying. There was millions of dollars available, but the county just couldn't quite get there to close it. So it sort of fizzled. Of course, if we were to do something like this, it would probably mean that Chief Holstey and his team are stuck in that building for longer. It would slow that down. So there's a lot of things to think about, but I just wanted to report that at least Commissioner Benton was warm to the possibility of some form of collaboration on that issue. Thank you.
Eric, I think I got everybody, correct? Okay. A lot of great thoughts, a lot of great ideas tonight at Council Call. And so let's keep those in our minds as we go forward. And we will adjourn our meeting this evening at 8:37. Thank you, everyone.